High FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Stephen Grizz, the head of African Governance and Diplomacy Program at the South African Institute of International Affairs. Stephen Grizz, absolutely delighted to have you back.
Hi, Simon. Great to be back.
Stephen, we're going to talk about the fact that Israel has been granted observer status at the African Union. Before we do so and discuss the relevance of that move, perhaps give us some context. What is the African Union? What does it do? Who does it represent? What is it empowered to legislate or promulgate or whatever it is it does?
Thanks, Simon. So the predecessor to the African Union was the Organization of African Unity. It was formed in 1963 as countries were beginning to decolonize from Britain and Europe and Spain and Portugal and the other colonial powers. It is a political, economic, and developmental body. Its headquarters are in Addis Ababa in Ethiopia. And it meets regularly. There's some permanent staff. Then there are the ambassadors that are posted to Ethiopia that meet regularly. And now once a year, there's a summit in Addis in January, February, where all the leaders of Africa come together and debate the questions of the day and make policy decisions and so forth. And so it's quite a big deal.
Stephen, this is different from the shenanigans we saw happening in Midrand a couple of months ago with the African Parliament. No connection, I understand.
Yes. So they are connected. They're sister institutions, but the Parliament is a separate body that meets in Midrand, and the African Union is not made up of parliamentarians, but heads of state and ambassadors and foreign ministers and so forth. So it is connected. They're in the same family, but it's not the same institution.
I hear you. I'm understanding that it is certainly from a ceremonial perspective a very important body in terms of prestige. I'm just wondering, you know, if it doesn't and can't sort out issues like insurgencies in Mozambique, is it just a talk fest?
There's a lot of talking that goes on. I won't lie and deny that. And it does struggle to call recalcitrant leaders into account. And there are many problems with the African Union. But it is a place, for example, where the Palestinians have been very active. They have been observer members of the AU, since 2013. And I've been to a couple of summits in Ethiopia where they don't hold back and they try and rally the African countries against Israel on whatever the issue of the day may be, whether it's settlements or violence at the Gaza border or evictions or whatever it is. And high-level Palestinian speakers have been at that assembly, including the Palestinian Prime Minister and the head of the Arab League. So Israel's been totally absent from this forum for the last 20 years or 25 years, well, since 2002, so it's nearly 20 years. So why the change? So I think what you would have noticed under the last term of Bibi Netanyahu, he was very active in Africa. He actually came to the continent 5 times. He held meetings with 7 or 8 East African leaders. Then he went to the community of West African states in Liberia, and he met there. He came a couple of times as well on very quick trips to Africa. But Israel is looking for friends. It's looking for markets. It's looking for diplomatic support. It's trying to break the monolithic non-aligned movement that always votes against it in UN forums and so forth. So it's part of a diplomatic, economic surge, and it's been paying dividends. We've also seen with the Abraham Accords that were signed last year under the Trump administration that some Arab or Muslim majority countries like Morocco and Sudan have either renewed ties with Israel or, in Sudan's case, open ties with Israel. We're seeing the first flights between Marrakesh and Tel Aviv. Amazing. Israel needs to be there. Well, it feels that it needs to be there to be part of the discussion. It has a lot to offer Africa in terms of commercial, irrigation, other agricultural technology, high tech, cyber, you name it. In a way, there's Israeli solutions to African problems.
That makes a whole bunch of sense, but one has to take into account clearly a political reality, and one would have thought there would have been far more countries like Algeria who are very, very unhappy about the decision. Mm. How was the decision made?
I don't quite know what the diplomatic maneuvers were to get it through, because as you say, Algeria, Libya, countries like South Africa have been implacably opposed to Israel having this observer status. It actually had observer status at the OAU, and then when the OAU became the AU at the turn of the millennium, Gaddafi was the one who was blocking Israel's observer status. And in fact, when Nkosi Sanat Lamini Zuma was the chair of the African Union Commission, Israel made formal application to be an observer twice, and it was turned down. So yes, I think there are probably some countries that are fuming about this and are going to probably make life difficult. But, you know, the Israeli foreign ministry doesn't announce these things unless they're a done deal, as we saw with the Abraham Accords. I mean, I don't know about you, but when I first got news of us making peace with UAE, I thought, well, going public is going to spoil it, but it is far down the line. And the ambassador, Israeli ambassador to Ethiopia actually presented his credentials to the African Union last week. So it is going to annoy certain countries, but I think it also reflects the reality that the world is changing. The world is becoming much more pragmatic. While they still care about the Palestinian cause, it's not the be all and end all. And this is a significant diplomatic victory for Israel.
And Stephen, it's fascinating that you've actually been there and witnessed it and been part of the AU in Addis. Is it posturing? Is it people getting up to be heard to say the slogans, or is there workings in the committees behind the scenes that Israel could actually do something and achieve something?
Yeah, there's definitely both. I mean, there is a lot of posturing. There is a lot of, liking the sound of the presidents, liking the sound of their own voices. Every year there's an annual theme. So this year it's arts and culture. A few years ago it was corruption. Last year was silencing the guns. They do try and focus energy on those particular issues. As with Parliament, it's the committees where the real work is done. And if Israel plays its cards right and gets into the right sort of discussions, it can really be a very positive force. And I think as it's expanded its African footprint over the last few years, that's been recognized. I mean, you must also remember in the 1960s, as these countries were decolonizing, there were very close ties with Israel. Its aid agency, Mashav, was very active. There were thousands of Israeli aid workers helping with agriculture and other things across the continent. And that all changed after 67, but much more after the Yom Kippur War in 1973, where Israel's diplomatic footprint was basically wiped out overnight, especially with pushing from Egypt.
Fascinating to me that 67 was such a seminal date in a change of diplomatic relations. What was the expectation, that Israel sit back, do nothing, and get wiped out?
Well, absolutely. You know, it all depends whose narrative you're listening to, and countries like Egypt with Nasser in the presidency were very powerful, were very respected, and they actually portrayed Israel's actions in the Six-Day War, when of course Sinai was first occupied. They portrayed that as Israel invading Africa, which technically it was, but it was an existential fight, as we know, and Israel indeed probably would have been wiped out if it had done nothing. So, you know, this is also a form of competing narratives. And as I say, the Arab states and the Muslim states have had the run of the board for many years. So maybe now, you know, there might be some quite different conversations happening.
You know, I'm just connecting the dots, because my guest before you this afternoon was our tech guy, and he was talking about the massive cyber attack that crippled Transnet and the effects that that'll have on the South African economy. And one just thinks that if the South Africans would only just put their band standing behind them and go and adopt some super sophisticated Israeli cyber technology, you know, maybe these things could be avoided. But clearly politics trumps pragmatism for the moment.
In this part of the world, I think there's a lot of loyalty to the Palestinians. ANC and the PLO were in the trenches together. Of course, the PLO has become less and less relevant as Hamas has gained power. But nevertheless, South Africa is very, very supportive of a side that it sees as a kindred spirit in another struggle that's similar to South Africa. Now, many people don't draw those parallels, but many in the South African government definitely.
Stephen Groos, as always, an absolute pleasure speaking to you. Stephen being the head of African Governance and Diplomacy Program at the South African Institute of International Affairs. I'm sure Stephen will be talking sooner rather than later.
Thanks for having me, Simon.